views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Moms, are you ready to become enlightened, empowered, and stress-free? Well, get ready because you are about to tune into vibrant, powerful moms helping everyday women create an extraordinary life with Debbie Pokornik. Each week, Debbie discusses topics to help you become self-aware, inspired, and on track to create the life you crave. It's time to stop settling and start thriving. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show. I'm your host, Debbie Pokornik, and my mission is to help you create a life you love at work, at home, and at play. This month, we are continuing with a reading of my book, Break Free of Parenting Pressures. Today, we're starting partway through Chapter 9, which is talking about making common parenting strategies free. And because FREE is an acronym, it really requires a bit of background information. So I shared with you last week about the parenting pack and that in there you have your building tools, which are your tools that help you to build a strong, solid relationship with your child, and your fixing tools, which you pull out to teach a child right from wrong or to guide them towards appropriate behaviors. I introduced the acronym FREE, which stands for tools that are functional, F. This tool teaches your child something relevant to the error. R, respectful. So it targets the misbehavior, not the child himself. E, effective. It results in changed behavior from your child because that's always our goal. And second E is for easy. More work for your child than it is for you. Yay. Today, we're going to continue on this topic. So if you're just tuning in and you're someone who prefers to read a book, in order, or you find that what I'm saying is hard to follow, you might want to head back to the beginning of June 2019 when I started reading the book, or at least go back just a couple of weeks where I started part 3 on the parenting pack. Whatever you decide, I'm confident you will enjoy the show. And if it doesn't feel applicable in your life, I hope you'll return in the fall when I'll likely switch back to my regular format of interviews and other timely material. So without further ado, break free of parenting pressures, embrace your natural guidance, Chapter 9, Making Common Strategies Free. Stop, or that privilege is gone. Privilege removal is a tool that most parents use in one form or another. It is similar to logical consequences in that we are removing something as a result of our child's misbehavior. The name stems from the idea that our children's freedom, along with the items they have and their permission to use those items, are all privileges that can be lost to bad behavior. A lot of the key points for consequences are relevant to privilege removal. Although, if we want to get the most out of this tool, there are some important differences to keep in mind. For example, if our child gets in trouble for texting on his cell phone at school, his phone might be removed as a consequence, whether we gave it to him or not. The phone was part of the misbehavior, a natural link, and has been taken as a result. If, on the other hand, our child is skipping classes, we might take away the privilege of using his cell phone to get his attention and let him know this behavior is not desirable. To make this tool effective, we must make the link to the misbehavior obvious. So, for example, son, we got you a cell phone because we felt you were reliable and working hard to do well in life. Skipping classes at school to hang with your friends does not fit those qualities. We're taking your cell phone away for a week while you think about those virtues and how you can bring them back into your world. We look forward to hearing what you come up with. Now, sometimes with privilege removal, you can leave the removal time open to being convinced. So in this example, you could instead say, when you can convince us you're ready to practice these qualities again, you may have your cell phone back. If you're impossible to convince or tend to feel guilty or give in over time, this alternative will not fit well for you. So then don't use it. An important note to this is we cannot remove a privilege that we have not given our child in the first place. Imagine a neighbor telling you that because you woke him up by cutting the lawn early in the morning, he's taking away your lawnmower. It sounds ludicrous, and it is. If he didn't give it, he can't take it away. Similarly, if our child earns a school trip by working hard and doing well at school, and we take it away for misbehavior at home, any learning will be in the form of resentment. In this case, we are targeting the cell phone because we know it is something he will miss. It could just have easily been his music, television time, or permission to go to a party. If our son has purchased a cell phone himself, we would be better off to target something we did buy and he uses regularly, like his guitar. Since privilege removal involves removing the right to do something like watch television, listen to music, chat on the internet, drive the car, etc., there's often no obvious link between what the child has done wrong and the privilege she's losing as a result. This means we must create a link if we want positive learning to occur. If we cannot come up with any link to the misbehavior, then removing that privilege is not going to help us reach our parenting goals. Without a link, many kids will have nothing to focus on but bitterness or revenge. With a bit of creativity, there's usually a link that can be established, even if you have to dig deep to find it. We also need to recognize that this strategy is not great for a parent who is not home to enforce what has been taken away. If you work late and your child is home on his own, it would be very hard to ensure he's not using the TV. In this case, it's probably better to choose a tool that you can enforce a bit easier. Privilege removal can be a useful tool providing we don't overdo it. If we take away too much too fast, our kids get caught up in the injustice of it and the learning element is lost. If we take things away for too long and then give them back before the allotted time is up, we teach our children to keep at us because we might just give in. Few of us enjoy having our privileges taken away. When we use this tool respectfully, we help our kids learn how to think and how to take responsibility for their behavior. A lot of lessons in life are learned by losing privileges, so our kids might as well make that connection as early as possible. Free parenting tip: privilege removal can be a great way to get our kids' attention, although to be effective, it requires a link to the misbehavior and some thought about the items we are taking. Use it carefully. You are so grounded. Grounding is a tool that many people use with their kids because it was used on them. The main idea is to restrict the child's freedom, forcing her to stay home or in her bedroom at a time in her life when she is normally very social. Typically, it is tied with privilege removal, meaning that not only will the child's freedom be limited, but also the things she is allowed to do. There are a few challenges with this tool, including the following. Number one, grounding creates a lot of work for the adult in charge. For grounding to be effective, someone has to enforce the penalty and keep tabs on the offender. This can mean anything from listening for the bedroom door or telephone calls to watching out for nighttime window escapes. Number two, this tool can give the punished child a lot of power over family outings. For example, if a plan has been made for the family to go out to dinner, perhaps to celebrate an important event, a grounding creates a dilemma. The child has been grounded until the following weekend. To take her with you would contradict the grounding lesson, but leaving her at home alone would mean unrestricted freedom. Canceling your dinner would give her too much power, and granting a one-night pass defeats the purpose. Number three, often there is no link between the grounding and what the child has done. This limits the learning and tends to shift the child's focus from what she did wrong, as in it's not okay to steal, to the injustice of it all. Number four, a problem arises when the child being grounded is not very social. The parent knows taking away her freedom is not going to teach much of a lesson, but puts it in place anyway because it's the only tool that feels severe enough. And number five, depending on the severity, like what is taken and for how long, grounding leaves our kids in a position of total loss. In other words, if she has lost her freedom and all her privileges for a month, she has nothing more to lose. This does not encourage cooperation, as there's nothing more to take away. Adding time to the sentence achieves little, since it already feels like forever to our child. Grounding is also ineffective if you use it too often, if you put it out as a threat without follow-through, if too much is taken away in one angry swoop, right? Like a punishment that is too harsh causes resentment or self-loathing more than any kind of learning. Or if the parent gives in before the grounding is over. A grounding that is dropped by a soft parent teaches manipulation and weakens our parent power. Now, despite these drawbacks, this is a tool many parents use regularly as their ultimate weapon and would struggle with losing. It's worth it to see what we can do to make it more of a free tool. To make grounding as functional as possible, take away only the minimum you need to achieve your goal and tell your child what you are doing. I need you to learn that rude responses are not okay in our house. When you talk that way, I will remove a privilege starting with the internet, if that's your favorite item. If you continue, I will move on to the television, cell phone, and eventually your freedom, which means grounding. When your child does something you feel is a serious infraction that warrants an immediate grounding, take your time deciding how you will do it. If you feel it calls for removal of all privileges and freedom, give some thought to how this will affect your family before working out the details. Be sure both partners, if applicable, are part of this discussion and that the one who will have to enforce the penalty has the greater input. Freedom removal can be accomplished in pieces, like an hour per day, evenings, weekends, making it less restrictive, yet still effective. Taking time to determine the consequence is better than throwing out an immediate harsh response in the heat of the moment. Once you have determined what you are removing and for how long, give some thought to how your child can earn these privileges back. For example, you might ground her for a month and offer to take 2 days off for every day of good/helpful behavior. Or for each full week of good behavior, she might earn back one privilege. So for example, she might get her music back for a week of good behavior. This gives her a reason to try, and while she might ignore this incentive, at least the option is there. Kids who know that they earn back rights for good behavior are less apt to try to sneak back privileges early and less likely to feel resentful. This allows them to focus on their mistake and lets them know we believe in them despite their error. In summary, grounding is not a great tool, although there are ways to make it more agreeable. It is difficult to change a primary tool such as this, but it is well worth the effort. Free parenting tip: grounding has a lot of drawbacks, but with some creativity can work successfully. If this is your main parenting tool, you might want to add some new ideas into your parenting pack. Penalty called, time out. A parenting book today would not be complete without mention of time out. Many of us have used time out with varying degrees of success. To be effective as a discipline tool, time out requires a structured approach with a time out spot, timer, and clearly laid out rules. Unstructured timeouts tend to cause additional problems and challenges. Some professionals feel timeout, which involves removal from the parent, is damaging to the parent-child bond and can result in increased problems in later years. Others are advocates of this tool and consider it an excellent bottom line to be used whenever a child refuses to do as he has asked. In my opinion, timeout is neither good nor bad. It is a tool like any other and can be extremely effective in some homes and totally useless or manipulative in others. With the right information and understanding, I think it can be a great tool to have in our parenting pack, even if used only sparingly. When we talk about timeout, generally speaking, we are talking about a process that includes the following guidelines. First, the child is removed from the situation in which the problem behavior occurred. Second, he's not allowed to talk to anyone and no one is talking to him. Third, it is a timed event. Some use a child's age as the number of minutes a timeout goes for. Others use a set time like 2 minutes. It is the certainty of having a timeout and not the amount of time involved that makes it work. And fourth, to be effective, a timeout needs to be consistently and calmly delivered by the parent or adult in charge. Threatening a timeout without follow-through weakens this tool. A timeout will not work if a child does not care that he is being removed from a situation. For example, if a child is often alone, bored, or lacking stimulation, it will not make any difference to him if he is sent for a timeout. Only an engaging environment is hard to leave, and timeout relies on a child's desire to be around us in order to work. It can be effective to have varying degrees of timeout. For example, rather than have our child leave the room for a misbehavior, we might have him stay in the same room but sit off to the side of the action for a set period of time. If he can't do this without getting attention from others in the room or being disruptive, then we switch him to a removed timeout. A timeout is rarely a good tool to use when we are really angry at the child's behavior. Many parents have shared how frustrated they feel when they send their child to timeout and he sits there happily while they, the parent, are fuming. The parent wants to see remorse or discomfort in the child, and seeing him unfazed by this discipline adds fuel to the fire. Rather than risk a possible overreaction, we are better off to take a timeout ourselves or send our child away, perhaps to his room, until we have calmed down enough to deal with the situation. We might tell our child something like, "I am so angry I can't think straight. Go to your room and we'll talk about it when I'm ready." Timeout alternatives. I'm a strong advocate of reserving timeouts for people, adults included, who are losing their self-control and require time to regain their composure. This type of timeout can happen in any room that is close by and empty of people. In this case, I don't mind if the children play, read, sleep, sing, whatever helps them regain control. While they might choose to rant and rave in their isolation, I make it clear that they cannot return from timeout until they have calmed down and are in control. For this type of timeout to be effective, I do not set a timer, but instead tell them they can come out when they're ready. If they come out and start to lose it again right away, they go back in timeout for a set minimum time. So, for example, 10 minutes. Depending on the reason for the timeout, we might ask the child to think about two other ways he could have handled that situation or come up with a way he might fix what he has done. This idea I actually got from Diane Chalsom-Gossin's restitution model, which is all about developing a plan to fix what you've done and come back from that situation strengthened. In her book, Kids Are Worth It, Barbara Coloroso shares a rule called you hit, you sit. We applied this rule in our house anytime someone hit another person. It meant the person who did the hitting, whether he intended to hurt or not, had to go and sit in a chair by himself and think about what he had done for a set period of time, so like 2 minutes. If he was angry, he reserved the right to take a timeout in his room, since this option was always available. When the time was up, the incident was over. Timeouts in the car or at a restaurant require a bit more creativity and planning. In the car, I let the kids know that their behavior was not acceptable and used a warning to provide them with a chance to change it. If their behavior didn't change or it escalated, I'd pull over to the side of the road, turn off the radio, and say, "We're having a timeout. It will start as soon as everyone is quiet." If someone refused to be quiet, I'd assign a further timeout for that person at home and add minutes to it until all was quiet. This meant I had to enforce this later at home, no matter how much time had passed or how good that child had been since then. After a minute, I'd start the car back up and we'd continue on our way. In the car, I'd avoid further discussion of the problem, as that refocuses everyone on what was happening before the timeout and can get the argument going again. Many parents have used this car timeout successfully, as their kids seem to respect the seriousness of stopping the car. Of course, this would not be the best tool to use if the kids are dreading their destination or if you're late for an appointment. It is also not the best tool for traveling on public transportation unless the timeout is given after you get off. In restaurants, stores, doctor's offices, etc., the plan has to be set up and shared in advance to be effective. For example, we're going to a restaurant for supper tonight. Everyone remember what restaurant behavior looks like, right? Excellent. What should we bring to help you be patient while you wait for your food? What will we do if one of us isn't using restaurant behavior? Where should a timeout happen there? If this conversation happens early enough, we might role play restaurant behavior and brainstorm ideas about different places in which a timeout could happen, on a store bench, in the car, bathroom, at the table, or other possible consequences. At the restaurant, all we need to say is, "Restaurant behavior, please." Timeout can be an excellent way to calmly and consistently teach our children. It cannot do everything, but it can be a handy strategy for those times when our child requires a moment to get a grip. Free parenting tip. Timeout is a wonderful way to teach kids self-control. However, it can be easy to overuse and raises concerns about what our kids are learning. Timeout also will not help a really frustrated parent unless the parent takes the timeout herself. Free timeouts. The main idea behind using timeouts is to give the parent a plan to follow that will help her stay calm, controlled, and consistent when her children misbehave. If you find you get angry when using timeouts, it might not be the best tool for you. Before using a timeout, you need to tell your child what it's about, how it will work, what you expect from both you and your child, and why you are doing it. In deciding on these elements of the timeout, you should take into consideration the age and attention span of your child. The following is an example of how you can present the timeout concept to your child. Mommy has a new plan to help us work like a team. It's called timeout, and what it means is if you aren't listening to me or you do something that you know you're not supposed to do, you're going to sit by yourself on the chair in the hallway. If you sit quietly, I'll call you after 2 minutes and you can come back and try things again. I really want to help us learn so we aren't fighting with each other. Once you have decided to use timeout and explained it to your child, use it. Do not threaten it, as this weakens its effect. Use a warning system if you want. I used to use the Thomas Fallon's 1-2-3 magic. So you would say, "That's one, that's two, that's a timeout." But be consistent in its use. Be fair and recognize that if timeout works with your child, it's because he likes being with you or enjoys being part of a certain activity. If you start nitpicking at everything he does and using a timeout to reinforce your every command, he will stop enjoying your company and start pushing every button he can. If you put your child in timeout, wait until he is quiet before starting the clock. Sobbing quietly is okay, but calling you, asking to come out, telling you how angry he is, or trying to explain his behavior is not. Remind him only once that he is in timeout and that you will start the clock when he is quiet. Otherwise, ignore him until he is quiet and then start the clock. When the timeout is over, your child can return to the activity and try again to get it right. If you had asked him to do something like pick up his toys and his refusal got him a timeout, get him to come and do it now. Timeout should not be an excuse to get out of undesirable work unless you are willing to set it up that way in advance. So, saying something like, I can see you're too tired to do this. You can take a timeout while I pick up your toys. I'll call you when I'm done, but it might take a while. As a discipline tool, timeouts are most effective when they are timed events. If you allow the child to come back on his own schedule, he's not learning that sometimes he has to listen to a higher authority. If, on the other hand, the timeout is being used to regain self-control, it's better to have the child determine when he can return to the group. If he comes back early and gets angry again soon after, put a timed piece in place. Well, I guess you weren't ready to come back out. You go back in for 10 minutes and I'll check to see if you're ready to rejoin our group. If your child trashes his room in a timeout, have him clean it up later as much as possible and either move the timeout location to an empty space or use a different tool. Another option is to remove most of the things from his bedroom and return them only after he has shown that he can be respectful in timeout. One final option is to overlook the mess, except dangerous items, of course, and simply carry on. Now, in the book, I close this chapter with an exercise on clear expectations. I will post a copy of it on my website at vibrantpowerfulmoms.com. It'll be on the blog that is connected to this show. So you can get it there if you want to learn about setting expectations. With much respect for you and the journey you are on, this is Debbie Pokornik wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you enjoyed this show, please give us a shout out and let us know what you loved. Visit vibrantpowerfulmoms.com to find out more about Debbie and her sisterhood of Vibrant Powerful Moms.